very much for the invitation. It's been a very exciting workshop so far, and I can tell from the list of talks, it's probably going to continue to be that way. So hopefully I will not disappoint. The talk that I'm going to give is focused on topological phases in transition metal oxides, and it has two parts to it. The first part is focused on three-dimensional systems, in particular this pyrochlore lattice, which is the one shown over here. And this first part will consist mainly of two subparts. So one subpart is about topological crystalline insulators in transition metal oxides, the pyrochlore system. And the second part, we'll talk about this Ti star phase, which is a more correlation-driven type of phase. So the guys that are really responsible for the work here is Mehdi Kagarian, who is a postdoc with me. He's now moved on to Ohio State. Victor, I'm sure that most people in the room know. He's now a postdoc at the University of Illinois. And Joseph Machieko, who's currently at Princeton, but I believe moving to McMaster soon. So that's the first part. Second part is two-dimensional systems. And so the main players here is Andreas Ruge, who is also a postdoc with me. He's now at ETH Zurich. Zhang Hu, who's a current student with me. And Chandrama Mitra, who did first principles calculations for some of the systems that we talk about. So the first half of the talk is going to be mainly model Hamiltonian type studies looking for phenomenology. And then in the last part of the talk, we're going to try to move from model Hamiltonians to a more tighter connection with experiment. So depending on what kind of physics you like, hopefully there'll be something in this talk for you. Probably it's more of the exotic crowd here. Okay, so here's an outline of the overall talk. I'm going to briefly review topological phases that have been predicted in this type of pyrochlore structure. It has this chemical formula. A here is some kind of rare earth atom, usually two of those. M is some transition metal ion, two of those. And O is oxygen, seven of those. So this is the kind of structure that I have in mind. And I'll first focus on some minimal models and band structure considerations. It turns out there are important features in the non-interacting portion of the problem that have an important implication on what kind of phases you get when you throw interactions into the picture. So after going over some of these generalities, then I'll focus on this topological crystalline insulator, including interaction-driven phases that originate from it when you turn on interactions that are sufficiently strong. And then I'll talk about this Ti star phase. And it's a low-energy field theory, which is a BF theory. And the last part will be a little bit tighter connection to experiment thin films. So the upshot here is that we have a few systems that we've predicted where we think that there should be topological phases in oxides, which I don't think are confirmed, not to my knowledge anyway, yet. So I think, you know, if oxides show topological phases, it really will open up the door, I think, to a lot of interesting physics, because they're generally more correlated than the type of systems, at least where the Z2-type topological insulators have been studied so far. So here's a partial list of topological phases that have been predicted in pyrochlore iridates. That's the A2M2O7 compound, where M is equal to iridium. So there's this well-known work from Dima Pessin and Leon Balance from 2010. Where they used a kind of slave rotor formalism. It's kind of a way of decomposing the electron operator. I'll talk about that later. And they found that there's a topological Mott insulator phase. So this is some kind of interaction-driven topological phase, which is not adiabatically connected to the non-interacting electron picture. Young-Baek Kim and his group showed that you can get from distortions, a system which, in the absence of any types of distortions, would not be topological, but distortions can bring in topological phases. So distortions are common and important in the physics of oxides, so that's why I highlighted here. We looked at the effect of distortions and interactions together and found that if you combine those two ingredients, you can get new phases, something called a weak topological Mott insulator, which has an analog to the weak topological insulator. It's kind of a layering of several two-dimensional topological insulators. And another well-known paper from Vishwanath's group, the Weyl semimetal was predicted in this structure here. And you know, I'll come back to this one. And, you know, of the various candidates here, this one looks like it may be among the most promising in three-dimensional systems. And then there are other things. Axion insulators have a similar type of topological response, but they break time reversal symmetry. They need inversion symmetry. It's been found in cellular DMFT type calculations from Young Baek Kim's group. And then the last two here is basically what I'm going to talk about in this talk, topological crystalline insulators in this TI star phase. There's also a SM star, a semi-metal star phase, which is a kind of interaction-driven phase which has Weyl-like dispersions at several points in the boron zone.
So star and not star means...
So star...
Formation-driven and not formation.
Yeah, exactly. So if there's a star there, that means that it's not adiabatically connected to the single electron picture. Yeah, that's... I basically borrowed that from Senthill. My collaborators and I did. So.
Or like the FL star phase.
The FL star phase? Okay, yeah. Well, star means something unusual. So let me just say that. Okay, so minimal models for these kind of pyrochloriridates. It's good to look at the energy scales that are present in real materials to ask what kind of simplifications can we make. And if you look at typical nearest neighbor hoppings, they're maybe on the order of an electron volt and a half, spin orbit coupling. Maybe half an electron volt, same order of magnitude as the kinetic energy. Hubbard use, 2 electron volts. If we look at splitting between the T2G and EG manifolds, which results from the cubic crystalline environment in these materials coming from the oxygen octahedral cages, that's the splitting here. That's around 2 electron volts. Other types of distortions, say trigonal crystal fields, et cetera, give something that looks like 0.3 to 0.5 EV, Hund's coupling about 0.5 EV. So if you look at these energy scales, you know, from the smallest one, maybe here, to the largest one, it's not very much, maybe a factor of 4. So one of the challenges with understanding the real materials, and that's ultimately what we hope to do, is that there isn't a clear separation of energy scales. We can't, say, neglect spin-orbit coupling, or we can't really neglect EG states relative to TG states. If there's spin-orbit coupling, the manifold, the T2G manifold breaks up into J1/2 and J3/2 manifolds. In principle, we can't really neglect coupling between them either. So it's a complicated problem. So there's no obvious way to simplify the problem. And in fact, one of the issues with these heavier transition metals like iridium is that those orbitals are much more extended than lighter orbitals, say, coming from nickel or copper. And so nearest neighbor hopping models also are probably not a very good approximation. Probably have farther range hopping. And it turns out, you know, based on tight binding fits that we've done to DFT calculations, it looks like third neighbor hopping may be crucial in order to get the physics right in these iridium compounds. So if the third neighbor hopping is important, then it means the crystal field effects beyond just the nearest neighbors are likely important too. And so that point was, you know, raised by Hazoy et al. In this paper. And it looks like, you know, crystal field effects beyond just the oxygen octahedral may be important in capturing certain properties of these materials. So the summary here is that the minimal model is not at all clear. And that's going to be part of the complications in connecting model Hamiltonian studies with these systems and comparing the data. But as most of us here are theorists, except for one, I think, we can still... that's okay. We can still make some simplifications and move ahead. And it turns out, you know, in physics, we're often lucky that certain simplifications work in regimes where they have no right to work. And so we can pray that some of that will carry over into these systems as well. So one thing that I want to emphasize that's going to be important for everything that I discuss in the pyrochloriridates is that if we look at a system which has iridium here, it has 5 electrons in the D shell. The degeneracy of this T2G is 4 and plus the spin. And if you put spin-orbit coupling into it, then you're led with to have basically 4 levels down here, including spin, 2 up here, including spin. So So if you have five electrons, the J3 halves is filled, the J1 half is half filled. So the simplest model that you can work with, if you're assuming strong spin orbit coupling and five electrons in the D shell relevant to a material like this, is to just focus on this J1 half manifold and say that basically you've got one band with two JZ values, which are effective spin values. So the pyrochlore structure, if you just focus on these iridium ions, has four atoms in the unit cell. So if you have one band and four atoms, then including the spin degeneracy, then you have, you know, totally eight states. So, you know, these are the bands for different models. And the point which is crucial for us is the band degeneracy at this gamma point, the zero wave vector point in the Brillouin zone. So if you have a general model describing hopping, no interactions, just nearest neighbor hopping between these transition metal ions from transition metal ion, then there are two contributions which are important. So one contribution is hopping from iridium ion to iridium ion via an oxygen orbital. This is the kind of physics that's most important in the cuprates. But because the d orbitals are much more extended, then there's also a direct overlap between these d orbitals. And so there's a direct hopping that's important. It's the same order of magnitude as the indirect hopping via these oxygen atoms. So these are important to take account of. And you can show that in general, you can write this in some form that looks like this. So these can be parameterized by some T1 and T2. And if you vary the ratio of this T1 and T2, essentially spin-independent hopping in this JZ basis and spin-dependent hopping, then adjusting the ratio adjusts the degeneracies at this gamma point. So for one particular value, say of T1 and T2, you might have a degeneracy of 2, 4, 2, to give you a total of 8. For another value of T1 and T2, you might have 4 at the lowest energies, 2 and 2. Now, it turns out that these degeneracies are related to point group symmetry. So once you have a T1 and T2, as long as you preserve the point group symmetries of the pyrochlore lattice, there isn't any way to lift those degeneracies. And the filling that's relevant here is half filling. And if your half filling sits at a point of fourfold degeneracy, you're in trouble if you want to get an insulator. You can't get it unless you break symmetries. On the other hand, if you have the 4-2-2 arrangement, you're allowed to open up a gap at the Fermi energy and have an insulator and preserve those degeneracies without breaking any symmetries of the problem. Okay. So this is the kind of band structure you'll never get a Z2 topological insulator from. This one is possible. So this is, again, work from Young-Vec Kim's group. He did Hartree-Fock calculations for a Hamiltonian like the one I showed you. So there's direct hopping between these d orbitals, and there's also indirect via the oxygen orbitals that he put in. Had a model Hamiltonian studies that includes hopping between d orbitals of sigma and pi type. And he put a Hubbard U into this J1 half manifold. And then he said, well, let's vary the relative strength of the sigma hopping relative to the oxygen hopping, fixing the ratio of the sigma to pi. And along this axis, the zero interaction axis is U, you get insulator, metal, insulator. And these are topological insulators. So this is like changing T1 and T2 in the previous slide that I mentioned. Over here, you have this 4-2-2 degeneracy. So it's possible to have a gap at half filling. And it turns out that it's a topological insulator, Z2 strong topological insulator. 2-4-2, you're guaranteed to have a metal. And then back over here, you come back to that 4-2-2 type degeneracy. So if you turn on interactions, do a Hartree-Fock calculation, the most interesting feature that one finds is this Weyl semi-metal phase. There are these little light regions. It's not extremely visible here, but it's the region which separates the white from the darker colors. And so one thing it shows is that you get Weyl semi-metals within Hartree-Fock. Basically, it's a single particle type physics. So while semi-metals should be easier to find, they're less exotic in that sense. And the magnetic order that you get also depends on the value of these hopping parameters. I mean, not surprisingly, because the exchange couplings will depend on the symmetries of those hopping parameters as well. So the upshot is that You can get wild semi-metals from systems which in the non-interacting limit are a metal, or from systems which are a topological insulator. So one thing that we're interested in doing is, say, starting with a Z2 type topological insulator and turning up interactions and asking what one can get. In this case, one finds that the interesting phase, the wild semi-metal, you can get either starting from a metal or a topological insulator. But that's not the case for most of these phases. So if I go back to this list of phases and I ask which one of them require the 422, which is basically the one which would allow you to open up a gap at the Fermi energy, then it's basically all of the insulating phases require that you have that type of degeneracy. So all of these beautiful predictions rely crucially on this degeneracy at the gamma point if you're going to observe them in experiment. Otherwise, there's going to be a problem. And including the ones that, you know, I'm mentioning here, these type Ti star and this topological crystalline mod insulator, they require that particular degeneracy. Okay, so if we look at a schematic phase diagram, this is one which is, I think, originated with Leon Balance in this Nature Physics paper that I mentioned. Basically, this is the phase diagram that he calculated, and it's now kind of been generalized to something like this. So this is what our roadmap is, if you will, for these pyrochlore iridates. So this is the kind of thing that we hope will be seen in an experiment. What's shown here is basically a Hubbard U over hopping T and a spin orbit coupling lambda over hopping T type of phase diagram. At very large U, you expect some kind of potentially magnetic states. They haven't shown that up here. Large enough interactions, generally, you spontaneously break time reversal symmetry. Come down a little bit in interactions, you know, you might have a spin liquid, it preserves time reversal symmetry, some other kinds of quadrupolar orders that they've discussed. And if you have a weak spin orbit coupling, then generally along this line, this is, say, your conventional type Hubbard model, you either have a simple metal or band insulator, and then a mod insulator above some interaction U. So the interesting regime for us, and for many of those that are looking at these pyrochlore systems, is this regime out here, where the spin orbit coupling is large, and the interaction strength is intermediate. So it's not so large as to break time reversal symmetry, but it's large enough to drive you away from something that's adiabatically connected to non-interacting electrons. So one's looking for a kind of sweet spot in the middle where interesting phases emerge. And so almost everything that I'm going to talk about is focused at this putative sweet spot. These topological mod insulators, the topological crystalline mod insulator, Ti star, and all of these things are basically over here. So I'm going to talk about these a bit more in detail, but I just want to give an overall view of where these things lie. So wild semi-metal and axion insulators, these break time reversal symmetry. This isn't required for the wild semi-metal, but I think the most robust proposals so far involve time reversal symmetry breaking. Okay, so the first part that I want to emphasize in this talk is related to this phase diagram of Pessin and Balance. So what they did is they studied a nearest neighbor hopping model in this pyrochlore lattice, which included only the indirect hopping via the oxygen orbitals. And it turns out, in that case, you have this 422 type ordering of the degeneracies at the gamma point. So it's possible to open up a gap at the Fermi energy in the non-interacting limit. And when you do so, it turns out you have a topological band insulator. And then what they found within the slave rotor type formalism, it's a way to decompose the electron insulator, electron operator, so it can fractionalize, you get this topological mod phase. Now, the feature that I want to focus on for this talk is this black line here. So they found in this calculation that there appeared to be an accidental gap closing in the system at the L points in the Baron zone, and they noted that with a black line. On either side of it, it's a topological band insulator. So there's just this kind of, you know, set of measure zero as you keep lambda fixed and you sweep the interaction where that occurs. Now, it turns out that this topological band insulator has a finer classification. Not only is it a topological band insulator, it's a topological crystalline insulator. So it's doubly topological in that sense. Of course, it's not topologically ordered in the Wendt sense. It does not, neither of those predict a ground state degeneracy. it's topological, but it has topological band features and associated surface states follow from those band features. So these topological crystalline insulators are a little bit well known compared to the Z2 type, but we have a number of experimental examples for them. Liang Fu has really been one of the leaders in the theory of this. So he's made predictions for specific material classes, this tin tellurium compound, which is essentially what these experimental groups here looked at and reported nearly simultaneously last year, that they see these states in photo emission type experiments. So in terms of the experimental signature, they look a lot like the topological insulators. They have Dirac-like states on the surface. In this case, there are close to high symmetry points, but they do not lie precisely at a high symmetry point as they do in the topological insulators. They need to be at a time reversal invariant momenta in the surface state projected Brillouin zone. Here, they can be a little bit away from it.
So is there a symmetry break?
What controls the spinning between these two?
Yeah.
What is that detail? It's not a time reversal symmetry breaking. It's not, the symmetry that's giving the topology is a mirror turn number.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a feature of the bands that I think it's a material specific detail, which is ultimately related to the bulk bands that I think determine that splitting. So I don't remember offhand what the crucial element is, but what matters is as you move from the gamma point out, how many of these will you cross as you go from say gamma to this X point. And so that's going to be. If you look at lower energy, basically you end up getting, there's a Fermi arc. It's a circular thing here. So this Dirac point doesn't need to lie at the Fermi energy. It's the same situation as with the topological insulators. So the Fermi surface evolution turns out to be a little bit more complicated. As you change the energy, there's a Lifshitz transition that can occur. So you sound like you may know some of those details.
So you get lead and tin, and each of them contribute to that point at two different energies. And then they hybridize at the Fermi energy to form the cone of this 2D projection of the Dirac points, which only remain gamma at the mirror axis. So that's why you see that it is along the
mirror. So in principle, you need a circle, but it's gapped out
exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. So so what we wanted to do was ask whether or not those topological crystal insulator states could be found in a system where there may be interaction. So tin telluride has mainly S and P type electrons, so we don't expect strong interaction effects. So again, the motivation was that oxides are known to have interesting interaction-driven effects. So can we find a phase here which is topological because of the crystalline symmetries? And although the pyrochlore lattice is a little bit messier than the rock salt lattice of tin telluride, it turns out that it does have mirror symmetry planes. And so one can therefore use essentially the same formalism that Liang Fu has already developed. Look at the mirror churn number in momentum space calculated on these planes. That's the one shown here, and ask whether or not it has a finite churn number associated with it. So what one finds is that the mirror planes are organized by mirror eigenvalues, plus or minus one, and this mirror churn number is defined as the difference between the churn number for the states of those different eigenvalues, plus I or minus I, divided by two. So what one finds is that if one uses this model, essentially the model that Pessin and Ballanced used, apply this technology of calculating these mirror turn numbers, then below this line, the mirror turn number has a value of minus 1, or actually it's the other way around, minus 1 above the line, 1 below the line, but it changes clearly as a function of the spin-orbit coupling. As you, even at zero interaction, so as you move along this line here, as you cross it in the x direction, then this mirror turn number changes. So that means that these mirror turn numbers can be used as a way to classify the system, and moreover, that it's a different crystalline topological insulator on either side of that spin-orbit coupled line. So there's a finer classification, in other words, to the Z2 type topological band insulator there. Not only does the system have time reversal symmetry, it also has mirror symmetry, and so we can associate an invariant with it. And so what's shown here basically are some details of that. So here's the Berry curvature taken along a particular path through the Brouwer zone. Basically, it's along the zone boundary going from one L point to another L point, and one can see that close to these L points, L1 and L2 here, most of the Berry curvature is accumulated. So it's related to this band inversion that occurs at the L point, which was already noticed in the Pessin and Ballanced work, but at the time it wasn't realized that there's some topological change that's occurred in the band structure. So one can check whether or not these mirror turn numbers change, for example, if you break time reversal symmetry. So certainly the Z2 topological nature is no longer well defined when you break time reversal symmetry, but the churn insulator should be. So that's fine in the presence of time reversal symmetry breaking, so long as you still preserve the mirror symmetry. So what Mehdi did here was break the mirror, basically break the time reversal symmetry by imposing a type of magnetic order on these iridium atoms that preserved the mirror symmetry. So the magnetic order guarantees that the time reversal symmetry is broken, and the order was chosen basically by hand in order to preserve the mirror symmetry, and there's no change at all in the mirror turn number. So it's a way that one can classify these systems if they magnetically order but still preserve the mirror symmetry. So essentially what we did is we carried that farther. We looked at the slab geometries and the surface states and looked at various combinations of breaking time reversal symmetry, preserving mirror, breaking all of them, and the upshot is that you need to, in this system, break both of those in order to open up a gap in the surface states. Because if you've got one or the other, then whichever one is still there is protecting some kind of gapless modes in the surface. And so that's the upshot of these calculations, which are a little bit hard to read, I'd say, here. So as the mirror turn number changes, essentially what you do when you go from mirror turn number minus 1 to 1 is flip the top and the bottom of a slab. So you change the sense of orientation of the circulation associated with that mirror turn number.
Which ordering does preserve mirror symmetry?
So this particular ordering here preserves mirror symmetry.
Is this coplanar?
No. So this is a non-coplanar arrangement. So these spins point in some kind of, you know, funny direction such that when you take the whole crystal and you perform an inversion symmetry operation, then the state comes back to itself. So I would say that it's not, mirror symmetry. Yeah, mirror symmetry operation. So, you know, it's not obvious from this picture that that's what it will do, but mathematically you can see that much more clearly.
How many states will preserve the mirror symmetry? This is one example.
Yeah, that's probably there is. I think there's a lot of wiggle room for these spins. I mean, you know, if you have some particular configuration this way, you can probably, you know, bend it out, you know, any angle. So I would suspect there probably is a continuous manifold. Yeah. Okay. So everything so far was non-interacting. So that was just the non-interacting band structure of that pyrochlore lattice model. And we just pointed out that basically there's this additional classification. So we can add a topological crystalline insulator 1 below the line, topological crystalline insulator 2 above the line. So now we could ask, what happens if we employ this slave rotor formalism, which, you know, now it's shown, where we take the electron operator here represented by a d and write it as a rotor variable times a spin variable. So the rotor variable carries all the charge degree of freedom in this formalism, and this spin variable carries the Fermi statistics, but it's electrically neutral. So it's clear that it's a kind of spin charge separation. And then add in a Hubbard U-term. So if we do that, this is essentially what Pessin and Balance did, then at the mean field level, you get a decoupling of these rotor degrees of freedom and the spin degrees of freedom. And across the transition from this topological band insulator to the topological mod insulator, there is a change in the expectation value of this rotor variable. So you can think of its expectation value as a kind of quasi-particle weight. The quasi-particle weight is finite here, which ensures the proportionality between these spins and the real electrons. And as you cross the line, this vanishes. Basically, it becomes it's an uncondensed phase. Quasi-particle weight vanishes. And so what you're left with up here in this topological mod insulator is neutral fermions that are living in some kind of band structure that's inherited from the topological band insulator. So it's a topological band structure for these neutral spin-ons. Now, if you do the same thing and look at the mirror symmetries, then this type of formalism going across this transition doesn't break any symmetries. So if you had mirror symmetry below that, you have mirror symmetry above it. And if you've gapped out all the charge degrees of freedom, you don't have these excitations on the surface that you saw with the photoemission anymore that carry charge. But they're just there in the spin-on, charge-neutral sector. And that basically, if there's a mirror symmetry, gives you a new phase, a topological crystalline Mott insulator. Yes? Well, there's no symmetry that's broken. But there is, it's a sense that it's like a Mott transition. I mean, you know, the Mott transition doesn't break any symmetries. The quasi-particle weight goes to zero. I mean, one difference here is that we can't look at the conductivity. You know, it's insulating here and it's insulating up here. If we look at the surface, though, we can ask about whether the surface of the system would conduct electricity. So the surface becomes gapped to conducting electricity as you go across that line. So if you're willing to accept that a metal insulator transition in the surface would constitute a phase transition, then we could call it that. But yeah.
You have a photon also.
Yeah, there's a photon. That's another issue. Yeah. Yeah, so there's an emergent degree of freedom. There's a gapless photon degree of freedom that appears here.
And the other question is, what's the analog for term number, the moment interaction?
Well, I mean, you can still define a Chern number. I mean, there are ways to do it in the presence of interactions, you know, using twisted boundary conditions, for example. So people can do that in exact ionization studies. So you don't need block wave functions to define a Chern number. So, well, in this case, we have it easy because it's a mean field calculation. So we have a band structure for these neutral fermions. So we can just use the band structure and, you know, the block theory to calculate those numbers. You're asking whether or not, in principle, that can happen?
I'm asking whether this, in this photon phase,
yeah.
Do we really have this, this crystal symmetry, this topological crystal? Whether this additional thing is, whether this Chern number really gave you a different phase? It may not give you a different phase.
Well, I would say that suppose that we break time reversal symmetry in this phase,
okay.
Then in such a way, well, that we preserve the mirror symmetry.
Okay.
Then I would say there would be a sharp distinction there because that mirror Chern number in terms of these Fs.
So the question is the mirror Chern number is a free particle concept.
Yeah.
You don't have a strong interaction whether they still well defined or not.
Yeah.
So the question is that you know, in a free particle picture, you have a gapless boundary state.
Mm-hmm.
The question is that whether when you add infraction to the gapless boundary state, whether the boundary state can be gapped without breaking symmetry.
I think so.
So what is an argument that that's basically?
What is an argument to say that
so
it can happen?
Well,
I would say, but I don't have a good argument. I don't have a calculation that shows that. But I would say that, you know, a lot of the arguments that are basically are used to show that you've got this gapless type of, you know, state. Basically, it's like a domain wall type of argument, right? So you've got, you know, the trivial state over here, the topological one there, and you know, you have to interpolate, and it's kind of like a band structure inversion type of picture. So it seems to me that that picture, which is based on a kind of band model, would suggest that. Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm saying that if you go to an interacting case, I'm not sure that that will go through. So you might be able to gap the surface in an interacting system without breaking the symmetries. Well, I would say that the question.
Mirror chain number can, whether there's some understanding that this mirror chain number, non-zero mirror chain number, guarantee the gapless surface state even with interaction.
Right. Well, I would say that there's kind of two issues there. So, to me, the question may be whether or not gapless modes on the surface are enough to characterize the topological state. So, is your metric whether you have gapless boundary modes, or is your metric whether you take the bulk properties of the system and you can calculate an invariant from it?
Yeah.
So I think that which is the better way to say yes or no for a topological phase?
I think the gapless boundary state is almost like a definition.
Well, but that's because it's based on this, you know, non-interacting electron picture. Yeah, but even for the interacting case, I think there's still somewhere along the line a necessity that you're adiabatically connected to the non-interacting limit. So I'm not sure that it's really different. So I don't know the answer for sure to the question, but at least my feeling is that the important question is if we say, look at the wave function of a system. Is there something that we can ask about the property of the wave function that would tell us whether it's topological or not? So that's why I'm inclined to say that, you know, something like a mirror Chern number might be a more robust measure of the topological property than something like the gaplessness of the surface state, because it's one is about the wave function, whereas the other is about excitations.
But the mirror Chern number only applies for fully determinant wave function. Generic main body wave function is not fully determinant. So one cannot even define. That's a concern. One cannot even define the mirror Chern number.
So you can't define it.
My issue is that even when the wave function is not determinant, can you still define some kind of topological invariant?
But why not? I mean, if I have, is there a difference between the mirror Chern number, say, and just the Chern number? I mean, if I just have, you know, a quantum Hall.
If you define mirror Chern number in the Fourier zone, that depends on the band structure, and the band structure will not exist.
Sure, but why can't I make a generalization for the mirror Chern number that people have generalized, say the Chern number for an interacting system? What's the issue there?
You don't have resolute momentum. So here you can define Chern number for every momentum.
Yeah.
The generic Chern number, just putting boundary condition, you only have one number. There's no momentum.
Use Green's function.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
Green's function.
Yeah, so that's equivalent to what I mean to say. Yeah, so if I suppose I just had the, you know, the Green's function form, an equivalent Green's function formula for the mirror Chern number, like the formulas that exist for the Chern number.
Or the TI
invariant.
The question is, would that hold across the transition? And so I can see that this holding in the gray region where you have
right.
Fractions, but you didn't.
Well, so I think, I would.
Once you fractionalize, then.
So one problem is that I cannot use the single electron Green's function to get anything interesting above that line, because the quasi-particle weight is zero. And I'm guaranteed that I'm going to get a trivial answer within the Green's function for the single electron. So basically what I need is something, I need to basically look only at this neutral degree of freedom and calculate something which is equivalent. So it's like I have the band structure for these neutral degrees of freedom. I need to put gauge fluctuations back in. Yeah, right.
And also, Green function, there's an issue where the Green function of Lockheed Martin stuff, as we heard this morning, this Green function has zeros. And whether those zeros will spoil the Lockheed Martin of the Green function. And that needs to be enough. But I think for sure the Green function is okay for weakening function.
Yeah.
So it shows that those features are stable against weakening function.
Yeah.
But whether it's stable against the strong function, that's the I don't know, but that's something there's a good loophole there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. So, but are you're asking whether or not it's stable to interactions which are strong but not yet strong enough to cause a vanishing of the quasi-particle weight?
It's strong enough causing vanishing.
Yeah, so if the quasi-particle weight vanishes, then I think those formulas will not predict anything interesting. I think that they only work for finite quasi-particle weight. So in conclusion, I would say that they don't help here if we apply them to the single electron. I mean, the single electron Green function will not work. We need something which somehow ignores the charge.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that object is. Yeah. Okay. Other questions? All right. Let's switch gears a little bit. So that was slave rotor. There are some subtleties associated with these gapless photon modes and et cetera that we were just discussing. Now there's another way that one can use a slave particle type approach to get access to new phases. And it's not to use a U1 type of theory, but a Z2 type of theory. So this is a slave spin approach, where instead of the slave rotor, one has a slave spin. Tau, it's a spin 1/2 degree of freedom. And one can essentially do the same type of calculations with this decomposition as one did with the slave rotors. And my former postdoc, Andreas Ruge, had worked on this as a PhD student. And he suggested that we apply it to the study of topological phases. And so when you do that, perhaps not unexpectedly, you get new phases in the same way that you do with the slave rotor. So he considered a honeycomb lattice model with completely anisotropic coupling. So the Kane-Mealy model has a SZ type of spin-dependent hopping for the second neighbor terms. You can look at the three different directions on the honeycomb lattice in a type of Kitaev way, so that you know sigma x along one direction, sigma y, and sigma z along the other two, so that you completely break the spin rotational symmetry. And then apply this formalism. Turns out that breaking of spin rotational symmetry is not crucial, but we wanted to see if we could get a result that was independent of any symmetry. So we wanted to lower the symmetry as much as possible. So that's why we looked at that symmetry broken version. And the upshot is that there's a phase quantum spin Hall star that emerged here. So this quantum spin Hall star phase is born out of the quantum spin Hall phase at sufficiently large interactions. And its interesting properties are that it has collective excitations along the boundary that are topologically protected, but the single particle excitations are gapped. It also has a non-trivial ground state degeneracy. Yeah? Yeah, if you use the Kane-Mealy model, you also get the quantum Hall star. So it doesn't require the complete breaking of spin rotational symmetry. You get it for the Kane-Mealy model.
So what's the distinguishing feature?
So once you're here, so this state has no ground state degeneracy on a torus.
Right.
Once you go to here, it has the same degeneracy as a Z2 spin liquid. So it's fourfold degenerate. It's a Z2 spin liquid partly, but it also has collective charge excitations that are topologically protected on the boundary.
This is the, so what protects that?
Time reversal symmetry.
Usually in the Z2 theory, that's possible, requires fine tuning.
Yeah, so here it doesn't require any fine tuning. It only requires, you know, a critical interaction strength, critical spin orbit. So it's not a point in parameter space, it's a region. So if you look at, you know, single particle correlations on the boundary, they're gapped. Two particle correlations, they're gapless. So like, you know, density-density correlations on the boundary will show power law decay. Spin-spin correlations. But if you tunnel into it or try to do something which probes the single electron properties, it will just look like a trivial insulator. So it will look like a Z2 spin liquid in that sense. So it's a Z2 spin liquid with the extra twist of these collective excitations that are topologically protected. Yeah?
I think Jenkins' question was, is it true to see in this model there's no sign problem a priori?
This one has a sign problem. You can use the Kane-Mealy model, which doesn't have a sign problem. Well, there's a couple comments there. So one comment is that they didn't go nearly this far out in spin-orbit coupling. This is one in units of the nearest neighbor hopping. That's a huge spin-orbit coupling. I mean, they were way, way down here. So I haven't seen any published data way out there. Second problem is, which I think is the more serious problem, is that if you look at the energy scales here, this U over 10, where you get a transition from the quantum spin Hall star to this valence bond solid, which is what takes the place of the anti-ferromagnetic state, this guy is, you know, way up here around 9. So QMC says there's a phase transition, you know, like halfway down. So there's some problem with the phase boundary here. Basically, well, no. The problem is that the real system, I think, has time reversal symmetry breaking states that preempt this. So I think that the main weakness here is that if we look at the Kane-Mealy model, it doesn't have a high degree of frustration in the magnetic order. So it's easy to realize the magnetic states preempt these non-magnetic spin liquid states. So in order to find this, you have to find a model whose effective spin model, the strong coupling limit, is frustrated enough to prevent magnetic order. But at the non-interacting limit, it's a topological band insulator. So as you increase interactions, you will not magnetically order, and you give this kind of exotic state a fighting chance to be realized. Yeah, so if you use the Kane-Mealy model, it's fermion sign free, and you can do it. Mm-hmm. This model has a sign problem. Yeah, preserves time reversal symmetry, but you know the symmetries are such that you have a sign problem, so you can't do it. Yeah. So this one has a higher degree of frustration, which is why we looked at it. So, but then the problem is that the quantum Monte Carlo has a fermion sign problem. So I, you know, this is a little bit undetermined, but all these questions are important because Joseph Machieko. That was a two-dimensional example, and I thought, okay, the structure of the mean field theory, which I didn't really discuss, suggests that the same type of physics is going to happen in three dimensions. You'll have some kind of a TI star, which just replaces the QSH star. But what I didn't quite appreciate, and Joseph really brought out, is that the low-energy field theory is much more interesting in 3D than just the basic phenomenology of it. So I'm running out of time. I won't go through the details too much, but if we start with a Hamiltonian like this, where this is just some generic hopping parameters, could be the pyrochlorolattice model, doesn't need to be, and there's an on-site Hubbard U, just take it 2 degrees of freedom, so single band model, then one can use this decoupling, write down the action for the problem, and at the end of the day, brushing over many details, what you get is this kind of topological field theory. So there's a BF term which describes some mutual statistics between extended loop-like objects and point-like objects. And this number P here is corresponding to 2 in this case. If we did a ZP type of decomposition, this is what we did. We did a Z2 decomposition. So we get this kind of theory describing non-trivial statistics of bulk excitations. There's this type of topological term here, which is exactly the same as what you get for a non-interacting topological insulator. That's the E dot B term. So if you integrate out these internal gauge fields, you'll get exactly the same topological term.
So it is like a Z2 gauge theory?
This is a Z2 gauge theory in 3D. plus the stuff coming from the topological band structure. So it has an eightfold ground state degeneracy coming from the Z2 spin liquid, if you will. And it has the non-trivial magnetoelectric response coming from the band structure topology.
Is there a Maxwell term also?
Yeah, there's a Maxwell term. Just dropped it. Yes?
So what's the physics of this? Because all the charge is gapped everywhere, even on the surface, right? So sort of surface Hall effect physics, E dot B term, is not what's giving you this response.
So well, I mean, so this, well, this term only, you know, is sensible if the surface is gapped.
Right, but I mean, it's, you know, so system gap and then you get Hall effect.
Sure, yeah. So this, so the response here is identical. So in terms of the, you know, magnetoelectric response, this is identical to a non-interacting topological insulator. The difference is in the topological ground state degeneracy and in these non-trivial braiding statistics of, you know, bulk excitations, you know, these loops and particles that can be braided around them. Yeah?
But this braiding is the same as the usual theory, or it's different?
The same as which? Well, these are, you know, I mean, there's a charged particle which is being braided through like a Z2 flux loop.
Right, right. So it's a pi phase.
Yeah, it's exactly a pi phase, yeah. Yeah, the statistic will be different. So if we have a non-interacting system, then this P would be equal to 1. So it would give us 2 pi. Yeah, not pi. So
it's, what about if P equals 3, that's 3 and a 1 sensing,
or? No, it, well, it will be, yeah, it'll be different because the braiding statistics is 2 pi over P.
So like a ZP theory.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
ZP-based theory.
Yeah. Yes?
Is it clear that the vortex and particle braiding is the same as the two-tier system? Because small translator, if I have a pi flow, then there is something.
Yeah. Well, let me answer that with a calculation. So I'm running out of time. So that's the effective low energy theory. So what Victor did was to treat this model at the mean field level, essentially the same thing that we did for the quantum spin Hall star state. So we can put in a loop of gauge excitations, which create this pi flux loop. And then within the mean field calculation, explicitly calculate this braiding angle. And so it's a little difficult to see here, but that's this black curve. So as you wind around this loop, you're going along this way, and you basically go from 0 up to pi. And you know there's a red curve here and this blue curve, and the difference between those two accumulates the phase, and it's the difference between going around nothing or going around the loop. So it works out. Now, I'm just about out of time. I want to flash one thing that I think is rather interesting from the point of view of the model Hamiltonian studies, and that is if we go back to the point that I mentioned early on about this 422 versus 242 degeneracy in these pyrochlores, that can be tuned by the relative strength of the pi and sigma hopping of the direct dd orbitals. And in this diagram here, Victor has mapped out basically the phases that we find. So where there's a topological insulator phase of a non-interacting variety, and for a fixed interaction of U equals to 5.4, there's this oval, which is centered around this one point here. So everywhere inside the oval, you have this Z2 gauge theory in its deconfined phase. And you have this Ti star, or you have this SM star with these Dirac points at these specific points. Now, as you go towards this point, the critical interaction strength that you need to get the starred phase vanishes. So if your band structure is like this, it gives you a better chance to see these phases. And the thing which is cute, that maybe only a few people will appreciate, is that at this particular point where the critical energy vanishes, the band structure of this highly asymmetric d orbital model with spin orbit coupling looks exactly like a nearest neighbor model of hopping with no spin orbit coupling on the pyrochlore lattice, shown right here, which Marcel Franz had earlier calculated. So So it's as if, you know, all of these spin orbit couplings exactly cancel out to give you nothing other than spin independent hoppings. Okay, so I think I'm out of town. The takeaway message is maybe a little bit bleak, is that these topological phases that I mentioned don't have the right degeneracy in the band structure. And if we look at experiment, then experiments at low temperatures, if they're insulating, they're generally magnetic. So that's a problem with all of these time reversal invariant proposals. The second part of the talk, which I used up all my time for, is to say that take these iridates, make a thin film out of it, do density functional theory to get a great band structure fit, study those thin films with interactions, and you find that churn insulators and time reversal invariant topological insulators are excellent candidates in bilayer and trilayer systems of iridate. So that's the key message. So after a somewhat depressing message here, you make a thin film form and you have excellent candidates for topological phases in oxide. So I'll stop there. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Greg. You moved in most of your time, so just a couple of quick questions.
Yeah.
I have this question for TI star phase.
Yeah.
And on the surface, you have these chargeless fermions.
Well, so in the TI star phase, the decomposition is into slave spin and fermion. The slave spin is basically electrically neutral and spin neutral in the real spin. So the Fs, if you will, carry charge and spin. So they are, they have the same quantum numbers as the electron, but they are not exactly the electron because of that additional slave spin.
And that's why you expect to have this thing.
And that's ultimately where the E dot B type of thing comes from.
Whereas for the U1, the photon.
Yeah, so those are charge neutral, so they don't couple to the gauge field. So you don't get this E dot B type, yeah. You're allowed. Yeah, you're allowed.
So the last kind of conclusion you made that if you make the kind of few units set of the thin films, you kind of get back to the proposed pendulator side of the story. Is there 2D or 3D proposed pendulator?
So these are 2Ds because they're thin films. So if you take
so
a pi-
so you have the very edge state about the rest of the state.
Yeah, exactly. So you would have to do the kind of measurements, you know, that you do, a Hall measurement. Yeah.
One more quick question.
Can you use the you know, for other oxides, people do the things which look like sandwiches or interfaces.
Yep.
Will those work
here? Yeah, so that's exactly what our proposal is. So let me just, so I don't want to, you know, go on, but basically this is what it is. So we have some kind of band insulator that's non-magnetic, large band gap. It just acts as something to stabilize a thin film. And so it's, you know, inert. It only is there to make a robust. Yeah, so this particular one here, this is for a nickelate. So the nickelates are reasonable candidates, but they require more subtle physics. I mean, they require spontaneous breaking of time reversal symmetry, and the physics there is a little bit less robust in terms of topological phases, and the energetics put you close to a quantum anomalous Hall state or Chern insulator, but not right at it as far as we can estimate. But the iridates, which roughly as shown here, this is actually not the best phase diagram, but if you look at the range of U that you would expect, and we did a much more careful fitting with the bands, including, you know, these effects that I mentioned that we should not include, like J1/2, J3/2 mixing, finite spin orbit coupling, then for reasonable values of U, there's a window where you expect a Chern insulator and a trilayer system grown along the 111 direction, and a Z2 topological insulator in a bilayer grown along the 111 direction in these pyrochlore iridates. So I think that, you know, the upshot is that those two-dimensional topological phases look like the ones that are most likely in these iridates in the Weyl semi-metal in the bulk.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Greg.